Welcome, family. I'm Father Joseph here, filling in for Father Mitch Pacwa, who is in Jordan, and he's shooting some video for EWTN. So I'd ask you to especially remember him and the crew in your prayers for their safety and the success of their work there. I wanted to mention as well that I saw Mother Angelica just a few days ago, and she's doing remarkably well. She's the best that I had seen her since all of the strokes that she suffered through. So continue to keep her in your prayers. Know that they are helping her and that she continues to improve every day, for which we give thanks to God. I wanted to mention in the beginning of this program, and I would be remiss if I forgot to mention it, that it's our Holy Father's 24th anniversary of his election. And we're so grateful that he was chosen to be our Pope and all that he has accomplished. Some 98 visits to 129 countries, 13 encyclicals, all of these great works that we know our Holy Father for. And I think it was a part, really, of God's providence that his election date was today. When you think about the Feast of St. Margaret Mary, which we celebrate today, and she would be an apostle of what? The Sacred Heart and the love of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. So our Holy Father, Pope John Paul II, was one who really helped to bring about an increase in the devotion to the Divine Mercy, which flows from the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and help to bring that about. I'd like for us to join throughout the world as we have the opportunity here on television to offer a Hail Mary for our Holy Father on this election day. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. I was thinking, too, before the program, about the terrible sniper attacks that are happening in Washington, D.C., and how it would be very beneficial for us to enlist the help of the angels. So why don't we join together here at this moment and pray to St. Michael that he may help the police and all of those who are searching for all of those involved in this terrible act, that the angels may assist them in their work and that this quickly may come to an end. St. Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our defense against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, cast into hell Satan, evil spirits, who prowl about the world seeking the ruin of souls. Amen. Well, tonight I think all of this kind of is appropriate that I've preceded our program tonight with. It's appropriate for our topic, which is about life. And to think about how precious life is, that's our most precious gift, isn't it? That God has brought us all out of nothingness into life. And so the very fact that we are here today, that we exist, it's a wonderful thing. It's a precious gift that God has given to us. And I think mothers especially recognize that in the conception and the birth of their children. What a treasure that is. And fathers as well, I'm sure. And that is a gift that in our own age, as we're now approaching 30 years of the legalization of abortion in our land, where that whole respect and awe, really, at life and the gift of life, all of that respect is kind of diminishing. And we're losing our awareness of how precious life is from the moment of conception until natural death. That it's a precious treasure that God alone has the rights over. God, who has brought that person into existence out of nothingness, is the one who has the rights to call that person then from life. And so we have here tonight a good friend of ours who has been working for the pro-life movement really since the beginning of this legalization, the Roe versus Wade decision, on January 22, 1973. So would you please welcome to our program tonight, Nellie Gray. Nellie, how did you get involved in this movement after the decision had happened?
Well, it was even sometime before the decision that I began to be aware that a word abortion was, I didn't really know what abortion was, but I did know that it was the intentional killing of preborn children. And I thought, from a background of seeing other ugliness in the world, such as segregation and World War II, the Nazi Holocaust, and hearing these evils of intentionally killing a whole class of people, that I couldn't believe that it would happen in America, because we had just had the Nuremberg trials and mm-hmm. we were coming out of one of these ugly periods. And my real thoughts were, if you can't even save the preborn children, then nobody's life is sacred.
Yes.
And I really approached it from that common sense approach of if we can't protect all human life, then no one's life, whatever class of people, would be free. And I simply asked a doctor, so when is a baby a baby? He said, at fertilization. And I knew that our country had to protect life at fertilization. And then I became extremely aware that it was indeed the bishops of the Roman Catholic Church, which had launched a defense for the preborn children before I was aware of it even, but long before Roe mm-hmm. versus Wade, that the church saw the value of life and was ready to protect the children.
And then you were mentioning before the program that somehow you got involved in it, that people started to come to your house and they were praying and they were talking about
well,
what to do.
Yes, the March for Life as such, and to have action. What are we going to do about this Supreme Court decision? Mm-hmm. Then we had action, and it was indeed three Knights of Columbus men from Long Island, two of whom are with God Almighty helping us, I'm sure, now.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to march in Washington, D.C. on the anniversary date of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision. And they were pulling together people from largely along the eastern seacoast, but they wanted to march in Washington, and they wanted a place to meet, and they asked to meet in my home, and I mm-hmm. Was very pleased to host them. And the next thing I knew, they wanted an address and a telephone number, and I said, okay, and that's how you become president of the March for Life.
You kind of get drawn into it by the Lord, and He has plans. And
right.
And we go from there. Now, so the activities this coming January 22nd, what are the plans for that?
Well, Father, here we are at that first March for Life in the dining room. They were planning one March for Life, and it all sounded very nice. And we did have one March for Life, and then we decided that we had to just fold the books up because Congress was going to do it. And as we're trying to fold the books up, we realized Congress isn't going to do anything about this. So maybe we better mm-hmm. have one more March for Life. And so now we are at number 30. This mm-hmm. will be the 30th annual March for Life, 30 years after the infamous Roe v. Wade decriminalizing the killing of preborn children. And our program will be coming to the Washington, D.C., to the capital of our country, beginning near the White House, marching along Constitution Avenue up to the Capitol and the Supreme Court to tell our government that they have the responsibility of stopping the killing. And we are taking our responsibility to the streets and in a very peaceful way to our government. Our program begins that morning with a Say It With Roses campaign. We will, mm-hmm. students from Miami and usually from Father Kidwell's group of students from Miami, Florida, will hand carry live red roses to every member of Congress in the morning, with a letter asking them to remember the humanity of the preborn children. And with that will be the names of people who are sending those roses. Mm-hmm. Then we'll rally at noon near the Washington Monument for about an hour, and we will have a little pageant and so forth. This is 30 years, so we'll have a program, quite a program, at the monument. Then we'll go into the street, Constitution Avenue, march up the avenue to the Capitol and the Supreme Court. begging for help for the children.
Yes. I think that's a great symbol to give each of the congressmen a rose as a reminder of the value of life.
Well, it's interesting. You know, the red rose came with the men who began, after all, they began in Long Island and in Albany long before Roe versus Wade, trying to save the children in the state of New York. And to identify themselves, they carried a red rose because they couldn't carry signs. So the rose has been adopted by the March for Life as our symbol. And when you look it up in literature, in architecture and so forth, it's a symbol of short life and martyrdom. So we hope the red rose will become rather a sign of the babies and their life.
And I know EWTN is planning to televise the event as well, the mass that will precede it. And that's always a powerful thing, too. I remember Cardinal Bevilacqua last year preached at the pro-life mass, a wonderful homily. And all of the young people who were gathered there, Cardinal McCarrick commented on that there were so many young faces out there, which is a sign of hope, really, for the whole pro-life movement. And they stay there the whole night, and they pray throughout the night before they go out to the march itself.
And those young people come and help us with the March for Life. They carry the lead banner. The young people from various schools carry the lead banner and the flags, and they deliver the red roses.
Now, if someone wants to organize a group to come to the March for Life this year, what should they do if they want to be a part of it?
Oh, we'd be very delighted if they will simply get in touch with us. And I'm sure on the screen there is a telephone number and our website or our email so that they can, and our mailing address. Please request information. We'll give you information about the calendar and the events. How to participate in the Say It With Roses campaign, how to get your buses registered and so forth. Most of the people come by way of bus, and so we have a program to register their buses and then have them come to the Washington Monument.
And I noticed in your literature you mentioned that try to bring five others with you. And I'll just give the audience the information for those who are not with us through television but through radio, that they can contact the March for Life at P.O. Box 90300, Washington, D.C. The telephone number is 1-202-543-3377. 202-543-3377. And they have a website at www.marchforlife.org. So if they want to come, they should contact you and they can get all of the information about what to do.
Right, so that we can make sure that they have the information where to park the buses and so forth. There will be tight security, so it's best that we get the information to them and then they can have a very organized way of coming to the march.
I know many of our brothers, of course, at seminary at Mount St. Mary's, and then also I know St. Charles, they send buses down.
Oh, yes.
And also from Dunwoody in New York. So our brothers have participated in it over the years, and it's always a very rewarding experience to be united, I think, to be together with other people, to support one another, to go on with the pro-life movement. It's been 30 years, and that's a sad anniversary, but we're all called as Americans and as Christians to continue to fight for life.
And the most important thing about this whole pro-life movement are the people here. That otherwise it would be a very gruesome thing to be thinking about this all the time, which we have to do. We have to think about it. But the people who have dedicated themselves to such things as the March for Life in their local Right to Life organizations, at their parishes and so forth, this is a group of dedicated people who have a true love of God and the babies, and that's what they're working for.
Yes. Is there a theme for this March for Life?
There is a theme for this march that I'm very disturbed that, obviously, that we're still at this 30 years.
Yes.
So that you start asking, why is it that we're at this for 30 years? And what I am seeing is a lot of the words are correct on knowing that babies are killed, but we don't have the deed that matches it. So this year, the theme for the march is affirm the sanctity of each human life by word and deed. It isn't just enough to say, yes, I'm pro-life. You must then have the deed that matches it, and also the deed itself must match. it isn't all right to say, yes, I'm pro-life, and then have anomalies occur, such as say a politician says, yes, I'm pro-life, and you want to vote for him because he's pro-life, and finally you do, and he gets in office. Mm-hmm. The minute he gets in office, unfortunately, he either forgets about the babies, or sometimes, unfortunately, he votes for the intentional killing of the children or funding the children. And you see these anomalies happen over and over again, say in a personal situation. Someone who says, I'm personally opposed to abortion. And then when they're public officials, here they are supporting abortion. And somehow or another, they seem to be able to get the word and the deed separated. So yes. They think it's all right just to be for pro-life, but then by deed, unfortunately, to say, well, it's a woman's right to decide. Mm. So this is the reason for it's those anomalies that are very discomforting that we have formed this theme, affirm the sanctity of each human life by word and deed.
And it's really, it is certainly a Christian issue. I remember Cardinal Bevilacqua saying last year that you cannot be Christian if you're not pro-life.
Right.
That the two go together. So it is deeply a Christian issue that we all, as Christians, must be involved in. But it's even broader than that, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That as Americans.
It's truly broad. In fact, as I say, I came that route thinking about some of the history of our own country. We have endured the evils of slavery, and we're now suffering for it. Nazi Germany, unfortunately, inflicted horrors on with anti-Semitism and on their own people, and the German people are still having to feel the shame of that. When we have this much abortion, remember, there are more than 40 million preborn children have been intentionally killed in America in the past 30 years. And with that, that means that we as Americans are sitting side by side with this evil. Sometimes the abortion chambers are 8 blocks away, say they're very near the White House, for instance. And so we're living with this evil. And it is an American issue. We're all responsible for this. Mm.
And we can always say that when we depart from what is good, what is true, from our gospel principles too, there's always consequences that flow from that.
And
it's not just like, this is something between, it's just an individual choice I'm making. There are real consequences, negative consequences that flow for that, not just for the individual, but for the whole society, really, when it's on that vast a scale.
Right. That the hardness that we see, and many of us as pro-life people in the debates with abortionists on television shows many years ago would say, if we're going to have abortion, the next thing will be euthanasia. And they would say, oh, you're just a scaremonger. Mm-hmm. You're predicting evils that are not going to occur. We just want the rights of women protected in America. But the evils did flow. Euthanasia, we know, going with the disrespecting, it gets hardened and hardened and hardened. And then you have simply this personal immorality of the intentional killing of 40 million human beings. That means 40 million mothers at a time of either one or two births may have experienced the trauma and the evil of intentionally killing her child. But that spreads out not only to the 40 million children, but for that dear woman who has participated, unfortunately, it also spreads out to the abortionists. The feminist abortionists are caught up in this, and it is an evil. And the hardness comes to them too. The hatreds and the hardness of it come to them also.
I think we can mention, since you brought up the consequences, personal consequences for women, like Project Rachel, which is helping women who have had abortions, and who are suffering the consequences
right.
of that, to find forgiveness in the Lord. And that's where we always direct anyone of any sin, and the sin of abortion as well, that they have to come to the Lord to repent of that sin and to find His healing and forgiveness. Isn't that what we remember in the Sacred Heart, where Jesus said, you know, behold this heart that has loved men so much, And he said as well to St. Margaret Mary that he would give graces to save souls who are on the brink of hell. That's how much. I remember John Vianney saying one time in one of his catechisms, he says that the Lord desires to rescue the soul, to save a soul more than a mother desires to rescue her child from the fire.
Right.
And that's how much the Lord wants to bring those who've gotten caught up in this for one reason or another. Maybe it was pressure that they suffered from even their parents sometimes, or
yes,
their boyfriend. That kind of, they felt pressured into this. They felt anxious and worried about what to do. And this was a quick and easy, in their mind, solution to it.
What I have found on some of the phone calls, though, by women who have experienced post-abortion, they finally ready to talk about it. Before they can get to that point of getting where they can get healing, they suffer an enormous number of years of denial and that guilt before they can get themselves to reach out and let God come and help them, though. Yes. So that this post-abortion syndrome is a very important thing to tell women, that while the abortionists and the feminists are saying that this is something for freedom, basically what it is an entrapment for women. And the entrapment then is, unfortunately, years of denial and guilt until they can finally get back to God. Mm. And those years that they tell you about, when they come on a phone call in very unpredictable ways. Remember, Roman Catholic women are suffering from this just as much as everyone else.
Yes.
So that our hope and prayer is that they can get through those periods of real trauma, of denial and hurt. How could I do this? How can I get into this? Before they can let them go for the healing that you're talking about.
Before the show, Nellie was talking about the graying of America. And I took it a little bit personally, but she wasn't talking about me personally. Tell us about the graying of America.
Well, you know that I say that this, the abortion that we think about is so much of the babies, because we know the babies are killed. And that is a personal thing. It's a gruesome thing, and we don't see very much of it because feminist abortionists have that covered up so that you don't see the killing and the baby's body and so forth after a terrible abortion. But there's another part also, in addition to this personal, the personal immorality of abortion, is the effect on the common good. Mm-hmm. And that is one that we also think of the soul of America, so that the soul of America is being hardened too. Yes. From its goodness. Then there are the practical aspects of denying the goodness of God's graces on America, this wonderful country that we have, so that by the killing of the children, you have a killing of the society also. A wounding and a deepening of the hurt on society, one of which is the graying of America. That when you start looking at the demographic figures, you see that one of the outcomes of intentionally killing more than 40 million innocent preborn children is that the base of America changes from having a broad base of the young people in our country to a broader base of the older people. And what that means is also getting into just common sense in the economy, is you have a graying of America so that you're affecting important things such as Social Security, immigration, the economy, so that there is a weakening in the society. And this we're going to feel more and more as we hear, for instance, in our local area, there's a shortage of teachers. There's a shortage of nurses. There's a shortage of people to go into our military and so forth. So that the wonderful country we know as America and its great spirit, unfortunately then, becomes a target for all sorts of evils. And that's what you're seeing.
That 30 years of this abortion does have consequences.
It has consequences.
We'll feel those consequences.
Right.
I think as well, we are a people of hope, and there are signs of hope I think of good Catholic families in Hanceville, where the shrine is. We're seeing good homeschool families. They have Catholic values. They haven't bought into the contraceptive mentality of so many in our nation. They're having, we have families of 8 children where they're,
yes,
steps down. And I think there's at least three of them in Hanceville that I know of. The parents of one of the family are here tonight, in fact. So those are signs of hope, too. And I think the youth that we see in the pro-life movement, and you mentioned the goodness of the people involved in this movement, too.
I think the important thing is, as the battle is going on, and it is a battle, it's just a plain battle between good and evil. This is what we are seeing, and that we're in the midst of it. We're finding a frustration among the pro-life people, for instance, that we are marginalized at times, that within this battle of what is politically correct, pro-life people find themselves marginalized or excluded or, in fact, made fun of and asked to cooperate and so forth. This battle of good and evil is one of, here we are as pro-life people saying, do not kill the children. Somebody stood up and said, don't have slaves. Somebody stood up and said, let the Jews go, stop this killing. The standing up is exactly what we have to do, all right. But know that in the climate that we are in today of what is politically correct, this is very difficult to wage just on the level where we need to get something done, such as the executive department, the judicial, and mm-hmm. in Congress. So it comes down to pro-life people recognizing that they're sort of in the position of a John the Baptist saying, please don't do that, please don't do that. And the feminists are almost in the position, they are in the position of Herodias, wanting to stop this message. Mm-hmm. So our message must go on, that the pro-life people simply must keep that message going despite what may or may not be comfortable as politically correct.
And we need to see the whole movement is not, or the evil that's happening, as not something that's kind of out there.
Right.
That doesn't, it's an evil, but it doesn't personally affect me.
Right.
But each of us needs to be personally involved in some way, that it's our duty.
Right.
To work for life and to help to overcome this.
Because I am sure when you said our literature says, and bring 5 more people, right. Maybe I should have said bring 50 more people along with you, mm-hmm. so that we make those numbers bigger and bigger. But even at that, Congress knows that we are there. The Supreme Court knows that we are there on January 22. The White House knows that we are there on January 22. Mm-hmm. So that your presence at this March for Life, the effect of it, and the usefulness of it is that this issue simply will not go away. It's been 30 years. It won't go away until we save the babies.
The life principles. What are the basic principles of life that we're trying to instill in people's hearts and minds?
Right. Once that first march occurred, I think all of us knew we were just trying to save the babies. We were trying to overturn Roe versus Wade, and we all just kind of came. And 20,000 people came in less than 3 months, came to that first march. When we saw that we had to go for the second march or so, we decided we had to organize then. We had to have a corporation, and if we're going to tell everybody, come on, follow us up the street, then we had to have something to tell them what we're marching for. Mm-hmm. And so the March for Life Board of Directors sat down on one whole Saturday in a motel room in New York. We confined ourselves. There were about 30 of us. We were quite a group of people. There were teachers and lawyers and nurses and politicians and so forth there. We sat down and developed the life principles, saying that we had to be sure that we knew what we were doing. And there are about 7 life principles, and they boil down to this, that look at the truth and look at the facts and let us work with that. That we know that an individual human life comes into existence at fertilization. Therefore, we have to ask for protection for each human life in existence at fertilization. Don't kill with drugs and sometime implantation and so forth at fertilization. Another extremely important principle is that each human life has exactly the same value. It doesn't make any difference whether you're a tiny little one-cell baby or a larger preborn child or a born human being, that each human life has the identical value, and therefore you must have equal care for each and every human being. You cannot single out any human being as being less valuable and subject to killing. Mm-hmm. When we come to an issue such as what happens with the life of the mother, then we tell the doctor, you know, you have two patients, not one. They have an equal right to life. You must do what you can to save the right to life of each and every one of them. Someone may die, but the point is you may not intentionally kill either the mother or the preborn child. Mm-hmm. And another extremely important principle is opt for life. This is particularly important. At the time, we were thinking about, if you don't know you're pregnant, a woman doesn't know she is pregnant, then act as if you do have a child in your womb and opt for life. Don't do those things which would intentionally kill an innocent child. We also have that same thing in euthanasia now. Mm-hmm. Opt for life, meaning if you don't know a human life is there, it's very much like the old hunting. If you don't know whether or not your hunting partner is there, don't shoot and later find out it wasn't a deer, but it was your hunting partner. Opt for life. Those three principles are the guiding light by which we can then decide, are we going to support a piece of legislation? Are we going to support a candidate? Will this candidate stand for the life principles? And those are in our charter for our corporation, and we follow those.
Well, Nellie has certainly given us a lot to think about and encouraged all of us to be involved. That it's not just the word of truth, but it's the deed. That's the theme for this March for Life that's coming up. So we'll be back with your questions in a minute. God bless.
I'm Teresa Kumal. Pope John Paul has proposed five new mysteries to the Rosary. The new five are called the Luminous Mysteries, or Mysteries of Light. They include the baptism of Christ in the Jordan, the wedding feast at Cana, the announcement of the kingdom, the transfiguration, and the institution of the Holy Eucharist. The Pope is proposing that the new mysteries be prayed on Thursdays. He also proclaimed a special year of dedication to the Rosary, starting this Wednesday and ending a year from today. He asked that the Rosary be prayed for world peace and the strengthening of the family. And Pope John Paul is also marking his 24th anniversary as pontiff. His pontificate started on October 16th in 1978. He becomes the pope with the fifth longest reign. St. Peter himself had the longest pontificate at 33 years. Pope John Paul asked the Virgin Mary for strength to continue his pontificate to the end. This has been an EWTN Newslink.
EWTN sends our best wishes and most fervent prayers to the Holy Father, Pope John Paul II, on the anniversary of his election as Pope.
Tomorrow, it's another live episode of Life on the Rock. Join Jeff Havens as he welcomes musician Greg Maturescu, who will talk about how his music spoke to the youth on World Youth Day. It's Life on the Rock, only on the Eternal Word Television Network.
Well, we're back here with Nellie Gray talking about the March for Life, and once again, the March for Life Fund, P.O. Box 90300, Washington, D.C. 20090 is the zip code, as one of our good audience members reminded me. And you can telephone them at 1-202-543-3377 or on the website www.marchforlife.org. We have a question from our audience.
Yes, I was wondering, it seems like that in the dialogue that is coming through our parishes in our diocese, I don't know if this is true in other parts of the country, but when we hear about the protection of life, we hear an awful lot about the protection of the life of the death row inmate. But it seems that is now taking a back, our pro-life movement, the protection of the innocent child is taking a back seat to that particular issue. And I was wondering, how can we talk about that without diminishing the issue of, you know, the life being sacred, even in capital punishment issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that, of course, those are both life issues, and the Holy Father has spoken recently about the death row inmates, and that because we now have security that really can protect society from these people, that there's not really a necessity for taking the life of the dangerous person, and that his hope would always be for that person's salvation. And so there's not a necessity to protect society in most places, that they have sufficient means to be able to protect society. But that's a very distinct thing, too, we can talk about from the direct killing of the innocent, isn't it?
Certainly the death penalty and is, again, the killing. However, normally you think about the death penalty as what is called justified homicide, that something has happened in the society and the society feels that it must protect itself. However, so you have a distinction between preborn children are innocent. Here we're talking about out-and-out murder. The intentional killing of a preborn child is murder. That's the definition of murder. The one life principle that does come into play, though, even with the death penalty, is opt for life. Today, we are finding, and I'm sure it's always been true, how certain are you that the conviction was indeed the right conviction of the right accused who was the defendant and the perpetrator of a crime? Mm-hmm. That certainty is very difficult to get, even with a good jury and even with a good trial process and the appellate process and so forth. So that the one caution that you still have in the whole sanctity of life is opt for life, because you cannot be really sure today, and they're showing with DNA and so forth, maybe the defendant was not the one who was the killer.
Right. We have a caller ready. Hello, what is your question?
My question is, how can you cast judgment on somebody? Have you been there? Have you been in that position? Were you with someone in a situation and you were impregnated and you wanted to carry that life, but for some odd reason it didn't happen? Have you been in that situation, Ms. Gray?
No, it isn't a matter of who has been in the situation. It's a matter that any one of us can understand the intentional killing is not right, we can also understand the circumstances about the mother and the child, the thing that you were talking about, the pressures that are mm-hmm. on people, the pressure of society that is on a woman, the pressure of a society that is on the man who is paying for the abortion. One does not have to be in the position of having had to face the abortion issue for you to understand that abortion is wrong, and that if an abortion occurs, there is help there to make certain that a woman can overcome her abortion trauma. I'm not a black, but I can understand the civil rights movement. I'm not a Jew, but I can understand anti-Semitism in Germany. And it is my job as a human being toward my love of God and my neighbor to make sure that this abortion situation is not there. And just because many people in America haven't faced the actual abortion doesn't mean that we don't understand the trauma of it, and we don't want it in our country, and we don't want any other woman to have to go through that trauma that yes. she has just been through.
We don't want any woman. Right. And I think that's really the bottom line of the pro-life movement. First of all, to protect the unborn child who has that dignity, that right to life. But also, we don't want women to have to suffer this. It's a terrible thing to have to suffer, and that you carry with you for the rest of your days in some way. The Lord heals, and He's the only one who can heal, and He will heal. And He's ready to welcome those who've gotten drawn into this for whatever reason it happens. The Lord always wants to heal and to reconcile that person to themselves. We have a question here in the studio audience.
How can we get Catholics to do a better job of voting pro-life? In our last election, 53% of the Catholics voted for a pro-abortion candidate. And we just got to do a better job. I heard a good quote that if all Catholics would vote pro-life, we would have no abortion.
It's well put. That's a good question.
And I agree with it. I think I was telling Father one time that this has been one of the difficulties. This is the education problem. This is a problem of faith and education. This is also a problem of discipline. This is exactly what the theme is, that you are pro-life by both word and deed, that it is not acceptable for any American, and certainly any of us who understand the evil of abortion, to say I'm pro-life and then go out and vote for supporting it. Remember that abortion is not only the intentional killing of that child and the feminist and the abortionist hands on that child and the killing, that the evil also comes from assisting and cooperating with the evil. And this is true with whatever the evil is in the Father, whether sure. it's any other evil also, that it isn't just a matter of, well, I'm not participating in the actual killing. This is the reason I'm telling you, all of us as Americans have this responsibility, and this is the message out. I was telling Father that we had an amendment many years ago when we needed 6 votes to get that amendment, as I recall, many years ago. But we had Roman Catholics who were voting against us on in the Congress. So this is a problem. It's a matter of education. It's a matter of getting the faith. It's a matter of putting your faith, not just the word of saying yes, 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 but put your faith and your actions together. They must match. They can't have an anomaly in there. And that's our education problem.
We have another caller. Hello, where are you from?
Charlotte, North Carolina.
And what is your question?
I just want to thank you and your guest for the work that they're doing, which I know is quite often a thankless task in the pro-life movement. I also, it was your previous question from the audience that kind of segues into what I wanted to ask your guest about in regards to the lack of leadership amongst the bishops in leading the pro-life movement, specifically in regards to quote-unquote Catholic politicians in the Senate and the House of Representatives who consistently vote the pro-death agenda, and why the bishops aren't screaming from the housetops or the rooftops about these politicians is beyond me.
It's a very unfortunate thing that we see Catholic politicians that would be not voting for life, not supporting life.
I think, as someone said about the numbers, I've said this many times about the Roman Catholics also, we are one quarter of the population. If we truly loved our faith and followed our faith, that one quarter of the population can indeed be the leaven in America to show America what is right, what is good, what is wholesome for us, too. It's not just our love of God, but it's also love of our neighbor and ourselves as children of God, that if we followed our faith. We look to our bishops, obviously, for the leadership and the guidance and the discipline. What I'm saying many times about the beautiful documents that come from our bishops and from the Holy Father. For instance, we have the Gospel of Life from the Holy Father in 1995, and we also have a Gospel of Life from the bishops here in the United States, which is a beautiful document which talks about these very things. And so I think what we do is encourage and hope and let the bishops know that we penitent faithful are here, and that we will be delighted to assist any way we can, and that the lay people are here and we're ready to work for the church.
And I know our own bishop, Bishop David Foley, has not missed a march since they began. That he flies every year to participate in that march, as well as many of the pro-life marches we have here in Birmingham, our prayers before the abortion places. One of the positive things I think, too, the bishops have encouraged is a prayer, a petition for the end of abortion at all masses, Catholic masses, which would certainly have a powerful, positive impact.
And I think the bishops do have to know that we penitents out, and I'm talking about we're all the sinners, this is the teaching of Christ and we know it. We're all sinners. We've all got our sins. If we didn't have the confession, we would be in a terrible shape. Mm-hmm. So that we are here. It's true that the pro-life words and movement within the whole of American society is looked upon as a group of people who seem not to be with it politically. Well, we are with it politically. It is politically correct to do the right thing and not kill human beings. And the bishops need to know that they have a following among pro-life people to try to do that right thing.
We have another question in our studio audience.
It was more of a comment. In Cincinnati, the Right to Life newsletter list the candidates that are pro-life, and so it makes it easy to, you know, to vote for life.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of areas that it's hard to get this information on political candidates. So if the rest of the pro-life organizations could put out the listing of the candidates, then maybe people could be more educated on how to vote.
Are there places where they can find that information?
They can find the information. Generally, the rating of candidates is available through your Right to Life organizations. I think that the question that we're all talking about is that as Roman Catholics, as Americans, we have not taken this issue of intentionally killing preborn children into our very hearts and souls and right down to the marrow of our bones. We haven't made it personal yet. And the reason it's not personal is you don't see the babies out there. So it has taken on an issue for some people is just being like another issue. So if their main issue happens to be the economy or banking or Social Security or health care or education or something else, they just kind of let the pro-life issue swim in that whole body of issues in the political spectrum. What has to happen is that America, and that means everybody, not just Roman Catholics, that means every American, has to take this intentional killing and these bloody babies into the marrow of their bone, and that becomes the first issue, that you vote for a person if they understand human life and the sanctity of human life. This is not only a moral matter, but it's a common sense matter. How can somebody who is for the intentional killing of preborn children think it's they know anything about the education system or the health system or the Social Security system? They don't know anything about the economy if they don't understand that economy is here only for the well-being of human beings. And if they don't understand the value and dignity and sanctity of human life and their neighbor, then they can't be right on the issues of education and the banking system or anything else. So the issue is the sanctity of human life has to come up to be the number one issue in American politics, so all of the rest of the issues will be correct also.
Thank you. That's so true. If you don't have the right to life, then you've lost everything. That's your foundation.
How do you know about a health issue if you don't?
Right. That has to be the number one issue. We have another caller. Hello, where are you from? No callers? Okay. I have a statement the Holy Father gave in 1987. And this was as he had just visited all of the United States. And he was departing from America, from the Detroit airport, and he was commenting on our hymn, America the Beautiful. And these were his words. But your best beauty and your richest blessing is found in the human person, in each man, woman, and child, in every immigrant, in every native-born son and daughter. For this reason, America, your deepest identity and your truest character as a nation is revealed in the position you take toward the human person. The ultimate test of your greatness is the way you treat every human being, but especially the weakest and most defenseless ones. The best traditions of your land presume respect for those who cannot defend themselves. If you want equal justice for all and true freedom and lasting peace, then America, defend life. All the great causes that are yours today will have meaning only to the extent that you guarantee the right to life and protect the human person. Every human person, no matter how vulnerable or helpless, no matter how young or how old, no matter how healthy, handicapped, or sick, no matter how useful or productive for society, is a being of inestimable worth, created in the image and likeness of God. This is the dignity of America, the reason she exists, the condition for her survival. Yes, the ultimate test of her greatness, to respect every human person, especially the weakest and most defenseless ones, those as yet unborn. Today, therefore, my final prayer is this, that God will bless America so that she may increasingly become and truly be and long remain one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. God bless America.
You know, this also fits in with the history of America. The Nuremberg trials, one of the interests that I had in this whole issue of intentionally killing human beings, shortly after World War II were the Nuremberg trials, where the Allied armies that had completely overrun the Nazi armies could have gone into a country and just demanded the spoils of war. America didn't do that. America was great. America was acting as a compassionate country. They not only went in and helped the economies that they had just bombed to smithereens, but they set up rather a trial system, the Nuremberg trials, and they set up principles for the trials which said that an individual person understands the sanctity of life and may not intentionally kill anyone, where the defense for the Nazis were, but Hitler told me to do it, and the principles were set up, doesn't make any difference who told you to do this,
right,
that you have the responsibility for the sanctity of that life. And so America sat in judgment of another country and told them they would not tolerate the intentional killing of innocent human beings, and now America is participating.
Well, thank you, Nellie, for being with us and making us all think about the fact that it's not just our words, but we have to put those together with our deeds. And all of us, all of those who are with us, if we all do that, if we all contemplate the truth about the dignity of every human life and we put that together with some concrete action, we can make a difference. We can be leaven for our country, for our nation, for our reform and for a change that is so desperately needed. And of course, continue to pray. Ask Our Lady, patroness of the unborn, especially that prayer of the Rosary the Holy Father added today, those five extra decades. So now we have five more we can pray for life. So I'd like to close by giving you all a blessing. May the Lord bless you and keep you, let His face shine upon you and give you His peace, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
God bless you.
Thank you.